I'm Matt Brailsford.
I'm Kevin Jump.
I'm Lee Kelleher.
And you're listening to Package Manifest,
a podcast all about Umbraco packages.
Hello.
Hello.
Hiya.
How you doing?
Good. I'm just starting to recover from Co Garden.
We're almost like a week in and I'm still trying to recover. I've been sleeping so well. Like, I haven't even got up to go to the toilet of night. So I'm just sleeping.
Relaxed. Yeah.
I thought I'd done okay because the Saturday, Sunday, I felt fine. But it hit me on Monday.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
When you actually try and sit down and do some work and your mind's just an absolute mess and you just cannot figure it out. Oh, yeah, I'm still getting over Kogan.
Yeah.
Successes, people, what have we been up to? Anything good?
Can the successes include Code Garden? As in,
we did
talks and we finished it, completed it.
Oh, that's true. You two spoke, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mm.
I had to speak, what, 4 and a bit times?
Wow.
I was at the business summit, so I had to give the same presentation 3 times, which turned out not too bad. 3 minutes in the keynote and then a presentation on Thursday morning. But I'm glad everything I did was in the morning because then I could just chill out the rest of the day.
Yeah. My talk was on the Thursday morning. So, yeah, I had that kind of anxiety on the Wednesday and stuff of just in the run-up to the talk. And then after that, I was, completely relaxed.
I think that's the first Code Garden in a long time I've been to where I didn't talk. And actually, it was really good. So I just didn't have any of the stress.
I did the same in 2019. So I didn't have any talks. I didn't even go to the retreat that year. And it was just very, very, very relaxed. I was like, this is great. Yeah.
Not bad to say you weren't going to come, Kev.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to come. And then you bullied me into it. And then, no, it was definitely worth it. It was good.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a good not talking one. I'd sort of forgotten. You tend to talk so often and put a talk in and think, oh, it isn't that bad. And then you stress out about it. So I hadn't really done a Code Garden without a talk. And it was really good.
Something I did this Code Garden that was a little bit conscious, maybe not, but a little bit, was that I just didn't take any photographs.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm taking photographs, I feel like I'm just trying to find a moment that would look good in a picture and you're not necessarily paying attention to what's going on around you.
Yeah.
I mean, I am missing out now that I've got nothing to share on Twitter, but it's kind of like I was just trying to be present and actually experience it as a whole rather than just constantly trying to find Instagram moments.
You see, I didn't take any photographs really until there was a boxing match and then I took loads.
Yeah, I took one photo. That was all.
Yeah.
We'll get to Code Garden in a minute because this is going to be our topic for today. But that's some nice successes for Code Garden. Has anybody got anything non-work?
Oh, non-work. I've done work things since I've got back.
Well, they can be work.
Infused. You see, Code Garden was so great. You know, the first thing I did is I got us sorted out our help desk software.
Nice.
That's how exciting that was.
Yeah.
So, mainly because there's 2 or 3 of us looking at the inbox and it was getting messy.
Yeah.
So found a free thing, did that. I turned out like, I'm all enthused. Let's do help desk software. But that's actually really good because it just means the emails are coming in properly now.
Yeah.
I've been messing about with migration since then. A little bit off Code Garden, but mainly just to get it out the way, do some migration things. And so just now, and hopefully when the podcast is live, it will be launched, got it working so we can migrate from 7 to 11 in one step, block list, block grid, everything.
Wow.
So, I mean, results may vary.
There's some big claims.
Big claims. Oh, it works on my machine.
So you're going to do everybody's migrations for them?
No, I'm not doing anybody's migrations. I don't know about migrations. I'm not doing migrations. You see, it's actually been the other thing that's happened this week. It's been 10 years since I quit the rat race and decided to work for myself. And initially, I wasn't doing Umbraco as the thing. I was obviously messing about with Umbraco and we had U-Sync and everything. But it was much more around consultancy, especially around local government, because that's what I'd done. So I used to go to Umbraco meetups and stuff and organise Umbraco meetups and start with, "Hi, I'm Kevin, I don't do Umbraco," for at least 2 or 3 years until I had to admit that I probably do Umbraco a bit. But it feels a little bit the same at the moment. I keep saying to people, I don't do migrations. I'm not doing migrations. And I really don't want to be doing migrations, but I am aware. It sounds very much like I was saying, I don't do Umbraco. So.
I remember you saying that back in the day, and I was like, yeah.
It was denial. I was trying to make money a different way. And you do the thing you enjoy, and actually, consultancy's boring. So.
I like how you snuck in a little success thing there, though. That's 10 years.
10 years. 10 years yesterday as we were recording.
That didn't pop up in your mind to think of as a success 10 years.
No, well, we didn't do anything. We're doing something tomorrow, so we haven't actually done anything to celebrate it. It just sort of flew past just because of the shape of the week. Yeah. So, yeah, it was technically 10 days yesterday, but tomorrow we're going to do something about it. And is it 10 days? Because obviously when you quit a real job, I took leave at the end, so it technically isn't until the end of the month. So, yeah. I was on holiday for a week and a bit at the end of that. But
yeah. Are you counting every sick day, every Christmas holiday? Yeah. Take those all out. See how long.
I suppose I technically started working about about 2 days. I started on my own job with no idea what I was doing. So,
well, my only thing post Kirkgarden, occasionally I play football of an evening. Mm. And last night was the last game in our season, which we've been doing for a few months now. And yesterday was the first time I actually managed to score a goal.
Oh, yeah. Can you describe the goal? Was it from distance?
No, it was right in front of the net. I think it might have been from a corner. So I managed to get into a really good position, which I seem to be able to do quite a lot, but my finishing skills are absolutely terrible. So yeah, Kirkgarden then. This is what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
So I know we made an effort while we were there to try and go see different things. So we weren't around each other all day. Mm. Still come back. That's not because I didn't want to be with you. Just that it'd be more interesting to have more material.
Well, I'll admit I didn't actually go to your talk, Matt.
No.
Because I'm not with... I know. I felt bad. I think you clashed with one of the talks about web components or something or other.
Yeah.
I went to see Lee because, it's...
No, I didn't go to see
thing.
Lee.
No.
What? What?
But yeah, no, I went to loads of different talks in the end.
Yeah.
And, actually, a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I've written down a list of everything I went to see, and there are a few that I regret not going to see or missing. But... I have actually managed to see quite a few, and usually I feel like I only go to see one or two, and then I'm chatting with people or catching up with people that you've not seen. But I do think I managed to get a good list.
No, I did what you were saying then. I was just chatting to people, and I went to quite a few talks, but not rigid.
Well, I think it comes back to the other thing is your talk was on the Thursday morning, and you were probably stressing out all of the first day, weren't you?
Yeah. Did any of you have a strategy? Were you going to see specific types of talks, or were you going after just different things?
I probably went and saw every talk about the new back office in whatever form it was in. I think there were three or four stretched across the 2.5 days.
Yeah.
So I went to see all of them to see if I can get my head around it anymore.
Yeah.
And they were good. I mean, the main theme is... with the new back office, you can create a dashboard that when you click on a button, increments a counter.
So counters are the next big thing.
That's the next big thing. I think it's because every demo was an introductory demo. Yeah. They pretty much all had a counter. So I can't wait to do that package.
Well, it's been missing. I can't think of a counter package.
counter.
Lee's ears perked up then.
Yeah.
Another property editor that doesn't exist.
You wouldn't have been able to fit it in your talk, though. Yeah.
Oh, I would run out of time. This is it. I can't add any new property editors to Contentment because there's not enough time to
not
talk
on,
about.
Not in your presentation.
No, part one. Yeah.
No, so I went to all the web component ones. They were really interesting. Really, they gave a good insight into how it's plumbed together at the moment. And Callum did a talk on sort of vaguely. I think he wanted to do property editors, but it doesn't quite work in the alpha release, which was announced.
Yeah.
So he did probably the one that helped plug together how you might do it in a package. So he was talking about Vite and build tools and how you might plug it all together. And obviously, it's still very early on, but that was good to see how that might work. Mm. But in all honesty, it's not quite there. So there's still a little bit to go, even though there's an alpha out. You can't do anything too in-depth with it at the moment.
I know they're still working heavily in like the doc type setup area, which is kind of key to being able to do property editors. And I think they were saying, I've had a couple of chats with a couple of people from Core Team, and they were all saying about give it a month and then it'll probably be there to actually start doing that stuff.
Yeah, and I had the same. So there was a CMS back office thing, in the couches at the back of Code Garden, informal session. And that one I went to and asked a lot of questions. Because at that point, I think I'd seen two or three of the web component ones, and they'd all been very similar in that this is what you can do. Here's a counter. And this is how this little bit works and this little bit works. And I was sort of going, that's great. I just needed the next thing, which is, how do I talk to custom back office controllers and stuff like that? And the answer is, don't quite know yet, is the honest answer. And so it's sort of, from a package developer point of view, you could get going. You could certainly maybe look at your building techniques and stuff. But I don't think you could build a package that did anything, to be honest, with the alpha in the state it's currently in.
Yeah, right. I know, but that is going to be the interesting bit with the controllers, because that's where, at least within the core code base, that's when you start to get into like RxJS and the actual observables, which is kind of interesting pattern, it'd be good to see those real minimal examples.
Yeah, and I think that's what's missing at the moment. And I think there's not even some of that for the core functionality, never mind how you'd extend it. So I think that's it. I quite got the impression, I think V14 doesn't necessarily have the back office stuff in it yet either. So I think the new package, and I might be completely wrong, I think the new front end is sitting on essentially a slightly modified version of V11, as opposed to the management API stuff and everything that's also coming alongside the front end. There's a whole new management API in the back end, and I don't think the alpha's got that in. So it's not quite married up front and back at the moment. But yeah, I think I got an insight as to where it's up to. And I followed on with my secret Code Garden when I went to the SAS lounge at the end. Thanks to Jacob giving us the super tip. We were just having a chat with Jacob, who's front end leading the front end stuff for the back office. And after watching, he says, "Oh, I wanted to show you this," and he starts talking about localization, which has been my pet peeve, is that I'm not doing anything until localization's in. And then we just sat there and he started looking at all the options and going through them and just started writing the code. I'm like, okay. And he goes, "Oh, my flight's delayed." So me and Mark Goodson just went, "Oh, we've got to go our flight now," and just left him writing code. It's like, so, I think we even progressed that, which was really good. It was actually a really good chat. And we got, just talked about all sorts.
I'm noticing a common theme where we nerd snipe people.
Yes. We definitely nerd sniped him. I think it's been a long one for me because I keep going, "Yeah, it's really good, but what about localization?" And it's just because I don't know how it's going to fit in. And I think I do now. I think I understand roughly some what he was doing, how it might fit in, and the implications of starting without it. I'm still not starting just yet for many reasons, including holidays, but that's my little home break.
Yeah, I've not given a whole lot of thought of when I may start looking at contentment.
Mm.
I think I'll just need to see a more of a concrete example than the counter on the dashboard.
Yes. Well, I think that's what's missing I think Callum couldn't demo his property editor, because I had a good chat with him after one of the things. Callum couldn't demo his property editor because there was something in the alpha that you couldn't see. So it was either internal to the current alpha, which meant he couldn't get his property editor demos working on the alpha because of that. So that probably means on the released alpha of Code Garden, you probably can't create property editors externally. But I think it's more like a nightly thing. It's going to be a number of them are going to be quite quick.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be another one in a week or two and that will work.
I think the key thing there is just nice to know that those things are there, starting to get there in terms of NPM packages and making sure that you can actually build externally. It's not, there was talk originally that you would have to be building your packages kind of sat inside an Umbraco install, which is not really how you're going to do it for the bigger stuff anyway. So it's nice that those things are at least getting there to allow that proper in quotes, front end build processes. So it'd be interesting. I think I did a very similar thing to what you were doing anyway. So I was just going to sessions that I knew I had a little bit of a vested interest in either web componenty stuff, or another good one that I liked was Alice Meng talking about Postman and improving APIs. She's got an interesting workflow using Umbraco CMS to actually define her test and export them from there and put them into Postman. So I'm hopefully poking her to try and get her to release her her website that she set up, because I think it's quite interesting. I probably can't explain it very well, but it was an interesting technique. But yeah, I was basically going to talks that I knew I wanted to get a little bit more insight in. The reason for the API one, obviously, I'm doing the headless API for commerce pretty soon.
Well, that's part of the management stuff as well, because I know the management API and the delivery API. Is it delivery API is in 12, but the management API is the equivalent for the back office and has all the swagger stuff and everything.
Yeah.
So I'm quite keen on that, because from a package development point of view, I think it means changing some of your controllers and stuff, that you can get them to also be in the swagger.
Yeah.
Okay. And that'll make the front end easier.
Well, in theory, the management API is ultimately replacing all of your back office controllers that Angular is currently talking to. So that's really what those should be, the APIs for actually managing the content. And we'll do the same. We'll do the same for commerce. There'll be management APIs for everything that the back office does.
So is the management API coming in 14 then, or 13? Or is it separate from the new back office?
I'm not sure. It could be separate, because like there's potential external use cases. Specifically for commerce, I know there was one developer playing with putting together a commerce app so that you could manage your stores, and that would be a really good use case for management APIs to actually extend those and work with those externally. So not necessarily just the back office UI.
Yeah, so, I think, I don't know whether it's coming in 13. It's required for 14.
Yeah.
Some of the... how you do versioned APIs and use Swagger, if you tried to do it in 13 and you want, it would be heavily influenced with how it might be done in 14. So I think it's, if you're thinking of putting Swagger into a package or anything now, you sort of want to know how it's going to work in 14 so you don't break it, because you have to register it. I think the Swagger registration thing happens in Umbraco in the management API. You define your controllers and then they appear in it. You don't have to do all that registration. Whereas if you wanted to do it tomorrow, you'd have to register everything in Swagger. You'd have to create the Swagger registration. And obviously when 14 then comes along, I think you'd have a clash and it all fall apart. So
I did wonder about that.
That's what I've, from what I've seen, I don't fully understand it, but it was sort of semi in something. At one point it was in 12. It was one in one of the early nightly builds of 12 or something. I think it got pulled, because I did have a quick look at it for how it might work, because I was trying to get ahead of the game, but at the moment I'm just waiting for the game. I'm not going to get ahead of it. So do it when it arrives.
Anybody got any highlights? Any sessions that really stood out to you?
A few, actually. I went to the non-web componenty ones I went to, sort of had a theme. I went to the Strangler Fig pattern one, which was about migrations of sites. Not necessarily site migrations, but it's about moving from one version of Umbraco to another, and instead of doing it as a big bang, doing it where you like move a bit of your site to 10, say, and you still have a bit on 7, and you slowly migrate over and remove the features from 7 until it's completely gone. So a strangler fig tree is apparently a tree that wraps itself around another tree and strangles it, hence the name. Nice. But the talk was really interesting. And then for some of the techniques and how that was actually achieved with routing and stuff, and obviously with me not doing migrations, it was I just thought I'd go along to that. And then I went to a talk about HTTP handlers and middleware, which for me tied in, because it was all about, I thought you could, my package head was on, I was going, you could have a package to help you do a migration that does the routing and middleware. So on Umbraco 10, you're routing back to an Umbraco 7 site where it's not yet migrated. And there was a couple of them. So talks sort of tied together. I was like, well, that'd be a good idea. Maybe I could do that. Get back and go, yeah, I'm not doing that. It's far too much hard work. But I don't know if the migrations tool became something more than just press a button and it migrates your data, and maybe it became a tool that helped you manage that migration. That would be the type of thing we could add to it. But it was just interesting, really, to go through those things. Yeah, it was probably my themes were web components or migrations were the two talk themes. And then there was a talk about TinyMCE, which was really interesting.
Yeah, I went to that one.
Yeah, purely because it's what our business model is. It's about core open source. So TinyMCE's got, like, obviously it's grown. It was called something like Dungeons and Dragons to Fortune 500.
Yeah.
Because TinyMCE's from a Dungeons and Dragons forum.
So, okay, yeah.
Or something. And now it's obviously a used everywhere editor. But their model is core open source with added on bits that make them money. Which is exactly
what you think.
Yeah, the U-Sync model, yeah. Mm. Core U-Sync added on bits. So it was interesting in that sense. It felt a bit like a validation that we're doing something other people have done.
Yeah.
But equally, they talked about feedback loops, which you all know about. You should do, and then someone tells you. And so I came out of that one thinking, need to do more, get a bit more feedback from people about U-Sync, about what pain points are and stuff. So trying to work out now ways of getting people to tell me that in nice ways. Not just ranting on forums. I might do like workshops or something, or just meetings, essentially.
Yeah, it probably is that simple, isn't it? Just ask them. Yeah,
essentially. It's just finding the time, but I think I can force myself to find the time. Well, it's only like once or twice a month. Find somebody I know and say, do you want an hour chat about how you use U-Sync?
Yeah.
And
it's easy for you to say.
That is very easy for me to say, yeah. But so I'll probably be doing that. So I haven't yet worked out how, but based off that TinyMCE meeting, that's probably what I'm going to do. See how it goes.
That's very much something we struggled with Vendor, is actually getting to speak to customers.
Yeah.
And getting feedback. We get feedback from developers, but I think it's kind of different. That's way more technical. So you'll get feedback about maybe features that were promised or like just technical suggestions. But getting actual customer feedback and how it's being used by your end customers is kind of completely different and a lot harder to get.
Well, I think I'm going to go for a bit of both because there's quite a developer-y bit of U-Sync.
Yeah, yeah.
But trying to get to editors, how to use the published stuff as well.
So Lee, anything stand out for you?
There's quite a few talks that I enjoyed, but on a whole, I think I was just in the sort of the mindset of catching up with everybody and chatting about various projects and things. So yeah, not one individual talk that stood out, but yeah, lots of good talks.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of hallway sessions, and let's face it, that's pretty much the reason why we came up with Code Cabin anyway, as a concept, because you just get so much value out of speaking with your peers and just chatting with other members of community. Good to catch up and good to meet new people. So yes, it's not on the schedule, but I think it's a really valuable session.
Yeah. I would say that the two things I got the most value out in that sense was the CMS one, because it was just really a chat around the back. Hmm. And straight after that, I had a good 50 minute chat with Callum.
Yeah,
because he'd just done his talk and we just ended up floating off that talk and having a chat. We just had a chat for like 50 minutes about all sorts of package things, everything. But that was really good catch up. That's when I started missing talks. Yeah. that afternoon, I started talking to people and started missing talks. Yeah.
What's the one question you kept getting asked?
Oh, mine is about banners.
Banners?
Banner. Where's the banner?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Where's your U-Sync all the things banner?
Where's the U-Sync banner? Oh.
Yeah.
But it could be worse, because I spent some time with Mark Goodson, and I can tell you the number one question he gets asked every time is, are you really here? And then someone pokes him, which is very funny to watch. Yeah. I'm sure it's not necessarily funny to be.
I guess you need to know the in-joke that he constantly...
which is he faked being there a number of times.
Yeah,
yeah.
And now whenever he turns up to any event... he just gets asked if he's really at the event. And people poke him to see if he's really there. And it's his own fault. It's a rod for his own back. And he keeps it going. So he deserves everything he gets. But for me, it was, where's the banner? But then when it wasn't, where the banner, I suppose. We didn't actually... quite a lot of these conferences, you get people asking you using questions didn't actually get many, to be honest, usually.
Okay.
Yeah, because I always live in fear. Someone said, I use Usync, and it destroyed my site, or, you know, cost my company X. But that doesn't happen, but it's the thing you're always worried about.
Yeah.
Lee, what was your question?
Honestly, hens. People kept asking me about hens. Yeah.
Do you want to give context?
Yeah, so on the Thursday night gala dinner, or the bingo night, they had an introductory video where there was a bit of a sketch, and this was throwing like a cardboard tube across the screen. Hopefully it'll, you know, appear online at some point.
Yeah.
And my segment involved handling or manhandling some hens. It sounds sinister. Yeah, some hens. So yeah, people kept asking me, how many hens do you have? You know, do you get eggs? I'm like, yeah, of course I get eggs. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, 7 hens, if anyone wants to know.
Yeah. Wow. How many eggs?
I mean, 4 a day at the moment. Yeah. So
I'm surprised Kevin wasn't constantly being asked about his butter dish warmer.
No, a few people did ask me about butter dish, but not loads now. Only the in crowd talk about the butter dish.
Yeah, maybe that's a sign that people aren't listening to the podcast enough.
They really don't care about butter dishes. One of the two.
One of the two.
What did you get asked, Matt?
What's it like working for HQ? Yeah. Like, how are things different? So my canned response was, it's the same but different. I'm ultimately still working from home. I'm still working on the same product. I'm just doing it for somebody else now. But other than that, it's good. Like, I like having people to actually chat to and ask stuff to. Like today, I managed to just impromptu have a good meeting with Piaka. Had an issue, I could ping him on Slack. Wow. We had a quick huddle. Wow. Can you imagine?
I know. Talking to people like straight away.
Yeah. I think some interesting highlights for me, beyond the stuff that's relevant to work, to actually like headless API stuff and the web components stuff. I do like to try and get to stuff that's non-techie. So like a good one was a talk on mental health. So that was Jacob Spencer, which I think was pretty good. So just really quite interested in terms of what businesses can do to support mental health. And there's like quite an interesting group, I guess, that you can actually get certifications in mental health support. And I think a really thing that stuck out for me is thinking of mental health the same as like fitness. You almost think that you've got to fix being a good mental state of mind constantly, but it's like fitness, that you can have ups and downs. Sometimes you put on weight, sometimes you're in good shape. It's not a constant. You can think that you do need to exercise to get exercises to get to improve your mental health. So that was quite an interesting point of view on it that I'd never really thought about. I'd always just thought like you've got things to deal with, you need to deal with them, and it's kind of that's fixed. You're in good mental health, but thinking of it as like a roller coaster, like you might do physical health, quite interesting.
Yeah, when I have my wobbles, let's call them wobbles, I think it's a bit like a muscle, because you don't immediately get over whatever's sent you off.
No.
It's almost like you've pulled a muscle and you have to work your way back slowly, or, you know, you've got to sort of keep going, otherwise things can just go. So it is. I do sort of see that. I can get that.
The other one that everybody was talking about, and I'm really gutted that I missed, but good news is it did get re-recorded, was The Brilliance of Not Being Brilliant. Did anybody see that one?
No, I didn't. And everyone told me I should have seen it.
Yeah.
I think I was sitting off having a chat and missed all the talks. But then someone told me today it was re-recorded on the Friday, which I didn't know about.
It went down so good. So it was on Thursday, by the looks of it. Yeah. So I was busy supporting DXP Group, so... Belletta and Andy were doing their talks. I wanted to be there for moral support, but apparently everybody who went to that talk really raved about it. But good news is it did get re-recorded on the Friday, so they asked him to do it again. Asked them to do it again, sorry. And then that's been recorded, and I think they're going to put it online.
Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah, the last one on Friday was interesting as well. The perils and visibility of where our technology can be creepy. So just like talking about the boundaries of when stuff gets creepy in tech. So like a while ago, there was either a hack or something that happened to like Alexa's, where they were all just eerily laughing in the background.
That's creepy.
Yeah. So it's like, what does it take for tech to be creepy? So it's like, it's not an immediate threat, but it's a little bit threatening. Mm. And it's just on the edge. It's not circumventing any security flaws or anything. It's all well within the boundaries of what you would expect in terms of functionality, but for some reason it's just creepy because it's like getting a little bit personal or whatever. Yeah. So it was just quite interesting, another one that's not necessarily specific to work, but just quite interesting, I thought.
Yeah, I went to Laura Weatherhead's talk about the compassionate developer and open source, which I think was on the Wednesday as a non-techie one, even though obviously it was about open source, and that was interesting. But it was talking mainly about how the different people function inside an open source community and how it all sort of fits together, and spanners, which are people who do more than one thing in a community, not people who fix things.
Yeah.
So, you know, the people who do podcasts. And
so we're
code.
Spanners.
We're spanners. I'm a very small spanner compared to other people, I think.
Yes.
But it was interesting. Sort of like glue, essentially. Mm. Gluing different bits of an open source community together. So obviously everyone can just sit there and write code, but if there isn't people doing the other bits, it doesn't matter. And vice versa. So that was interesting.
Who was the person who did the write-up after Code Garden? Because that's a good example of that, isn't it? Where it's not a code commit, but somebody wrote a... Let me find it. Yeah, that was it. Is it Mikkel Secker, maybe?
Yeah,
I don't know how to pronounce his name, but first timer to Code Garden, and just his write up's really good in terms of he felt what you hope comes across in the community in terms of like really good vibe. It's what gets sold as Umbraco's community, and it's easy to think that is the case internally while you're in it. Like it's definitely good people. You're always having a good time. It's a laugh. It's not like any other community, but to have somebody new come along and actually see that projects, because it could very easily be cliquey and difficult to get in on. But it's just so nice to see somebody coming along and sees it as welcoming, sees it warm and again different to other communities.
Yeah,
really nice.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I worry about that sometimes when you're there, because you see there's quite a lot of people who are new or are on their own. And you sort of see it around. And we all have the same thing. You're floating around with no one else to talk to. Mm. And you worry sometimes that it's like, you know, very different. I am not the greatest person at approaching other people. There was someone there I knew from way back when I used to work in councils, who first time there. And so I seeked him out a few times because I thought, I know he's on his own. It's his first Code Garden. He doesn't really know anyone.
Yeah.
But there's other times when you're just like, I'm not going to walk up to anyone. That's not me. But
it's hard, but it's definitely something I try and do, like, consciously.
Yeah.
You'll always want to hang around with friends, and I think that's a good way of relaxing and chilling out, because it's hard to approach new people as well, mentally. Like, I am a true introvert, so it takes a lot of energy to talk to people and really struggle to think of things to talk about. Not so much with people that I know, so that's my comfort blanket, and that's what I retreat to when I'm a bit worn out. But trying to reach out to new people and just get to know them a little bit more. I definitely try and have at least a few new people that I've never spoken to before when I've left Code Garden, which is, I think, a good thing. But on the vein of not knowing who to talk to, I think Owen, he did a tweet after Code Garden saying he, like, even as a seasoned Umbraco person, he had moments of like just wandering around, not knowing what to do, who to talk to. And it's quite interesting, again, to see the responses on that from a lot of people that similarly been in the community for a long time, and you still get the same thing. And I know I do. You'll have moments where you just don't know who to speak to, or you see everybody speaking and you're not sure whether to jump in. Or again, going back to the introversion, for me, it's like, what energy have I got to get involved? Like, it can be a long 3 days.
Yeah.
So it is hard to regulate that energy. But yeah. Personally, I've got to the point where I'm like, I feel that is part of conferences. And the thing that I have to do is allow myself to realize that's okay. Like, yeah. You don't have to be talking to everybody all the time. I think it's nice. Like, sometimes you will not be talking to somebody. You might sit down and, like, that's when somebody comes over and sits next to you and starts talking to you. And I think that's fine to let those moments be and not be fretting, because I think that personally would burn up more energy of stressing about, oh, I should be talking to people, I should be doing something, I should be networking. Yeah. I think allowing it to have those gaps frees you from that responsibility, and then you see the opportunities, or the opportunities quite often end up coming to you.
I made use of the quiet corner this year.
Mm. Oh, did you?
Well, yeah.
Was it quiet?
It was, and I had a little nap. but then a funny thing happened. That then Kim, the CEO of Umbraco, came over, and he sat next to me, and he started chatting, and I was like, oh no, this is the quiet corner. I mean, I'm happy to chat to Kim. This is not a problem. I'm like Kim, it's the quiet corner. He's like, do I have to shut up? I'm like, I am not telling the CEO of Umbraco to shut up. I was like, yes, you need to shut up. No. Yeah. So we did have a little quiet chat, but yeah, it was good to kind of just, you know, from the break away from the hustle and bustle and losing the hammer nail game, which I kept doing. So yeah.
No, it was good that they had the quiet space. I've been to one other event where they had it, and that was an Angular event a while ago, and there were quite a lot of people in there. We used it at least twice over Kirk Garden, and every time I went in, there were other people in there, so it appears to be a useful space. So I hope they keep that.
Yeah.
You see, one of the reasons I knew it was going to be a good Kirk Garden is because I think it was obviously not set up. There's when I walked in the very first day, after the pre-party stuff and gone in, I walked in and got me whatever it was, card, I had my card, I walked in, and the ambient background music, which was obviously just on a loop, started playing Jump by Van Halen. Wow. I had a walk-in song to Co Garden this year.
Yeah. I know. I think I had a Seven Nation Army stuck in my head for days.
Yes.
I think it's still stuck in my head. Yeah.
I was fairly convinced. I was fairly convinced when I came back to the hotel on the Thursday night, I could still hear it outside.
Yeah.
And my hotel was nowhere near the venue. And then my head was going, and I think I was throbbing.
That thumping drum beat, yeah.
Yeah.
Context on that, they essentially played it at the beginning of every talk. That was the walk-on music for everybody.
Yeah. But obviously I will be asking for Jump by Van Halen if I do a talk.
Yeah. So. Well, the room that I was in had like a purple velvet curtain behind the presenter, and it just looked like a comedy set. So I was like, can I have the theme tune to Seinfeld or something?
Yeah.
I wanted to get on stage and do a comedy routine. Not well, you could say that Umbraco Commerce was a comedy routine, but no, it's not. It was very serious. It was good.
Definitely from the video. When you looked at the stage, it didn't look like a comedy set. But on the video, it looked like the comedy set. You're right. It looked exactly like Seinfeld. Yeah. One thing I did like was that in the keynote, they were asking, you know, for everyone to do standing ovations every time somebody came up on stage. Mm. And everyone did for every talk that I did attend. Everyone
even
was
on the Fridays.
Standing ovations. I thought that might have grown tired, but no, it was still going very strong. And it was, I know when I did my talk, it was quite, I didn't know what to do. I think I stood there and went, just sit down, behave yourself.
You were worried about the time, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I was.
You wonder whether it'll become one of those Umbraco things, like the high five you rock, that stuck, and high fiving people's stuck. Yeah, I do too. Like the sentiment behind it, in terms of like every speaker's put a lot of effort in their talks, whether it seems good or bad, or you get anything from it, doesn't really matter. The amount of effort's already been put into it, and I do think something to gear them up when they're getting on stage. It's like I've spoken several times, and I still get nervous going on stage.
Yeah, and it just changed the atmosphere a bit as well. Yeah, because you can go to a talk and everyone's sitting down, and you just start talking to a quiet room, and you don't know how many people are awake. So
yeah,
my talks anyway.
Just listen for the snoring, then you know you're there.
Yeah.
So I guess we can't talk about Kirk Garden without forgetting bingo.
Mm. Yeah, big bingo night.
I thought I was going far with the rock, paper, scissors. 600 people, rock, paper, scissors. Mm. I got off the table anyway. I thought,
nice. Oh, yes. Well, I was out on the first round of that.
Did I lose to you, Kevin? I can't remember who I...
You probably did. If you were on my table, which you were, yes, you did. Because I beat everybody on that. I was table champion.
I think I was doing okay. And then I had a
very, very, very good technique, which was just the same thing every time. I didn't change. Did the same one all the way to the table. But, not saying it in case it happens again next year and then everyone knows what my secret is. So.
Well, I started overthinking it because there's a bit of psychology behind it, isn't it? That everyone goes for scissors the first time.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. But then you kind of double bluff it, you think, like, does that person know the psychology as well? So should I
everything, like everything I do in the Umbraco community, there was not that much thought in what I did.
Instinct.
None of it was thought out. But that was obviously only a precursor to the main event, which was track and field. Or not.
I like the whole theme of it, to be fair. Yeah. Like, I'm actually surprised Umbraco Olympics hasn't been done before for a bingo.
I think it worked well because, to be honest, it's probably, you know, it's never going to be as bonkers as it was when ultimately the person who owns the company, and it's not let's not say serious, but obviously it's a serious company, who owns the company had free rein to do whatever they wanted in the bingo. There are things that happened in previous Co Gardens where you just go, that's Niels or Per had an idea, ran with the idea, and spent a stupid amount of money on the idea. The banner, the Usig banner, gives me insight into that, because that was a silly joke that was meant to be really small and became this thing, and I spent a silly amount of money on it. Mm. And I can see totally how you can do that. And I think previous Co Gardens where it was bonkers is because Niels or Per have had an idea. They've done it, they've ran with it, and they've gone. And I don't think you'll get that, because while there's obviously a team organising it, and while that is really good, and it was a really good event, they're not going to go, oh, there's an idea, and then just spend a stupid amount of money or go down a really weird path because they're not in charge. There's enough people there to go, that is bonkers, but...
I don't think they've necessarily turned away bonkers ideas. I think it's almost...
No, I don't think they did. I'm not saying that.
I think it's almost one of those now where there's been so many things done. It's how do you keep thinking up new ideas?
Yeah, and I think it was good that they sort of broke away from just let's just bingo, because that would be just trying to replicate what happened all the time.
And the thing I liked about the Olympics was it got everybody involved.
Yes,
as in the games. Yeah. So rock, paper, scissors, track and field,
Jenga. You can't believe competitive Jenga. You can't say that's pay per view tally. That was
that, well. That, when it first came on, I was thinking, oh, they're taking a risk here, you know, because you got what. Yeah, I don't know, 800 people watching competitive Jenga. This ain't going to work. And then it turned out to be the highlight of the, maybe the second highlight. Yeah, of the evening.
Surely everybody's seen that clip now, though.
Yes. I think it was the build-up. Like, live sports should take time and build up. It was sort of like it wasn't as rowdy as a darts atmosphere, but it was a very similar thing, Jenga-like as the darts with the thing on.
I
wonder if they'll ever do it again, because you know, it sort of might have peaked.
I think it's one of those. You've got to do it one time. But does somebody somebody want to try and describe the moment?
Well, I think when he was taking his go, and I don't know the names of the contestants, but when he was taking his go, I think he'd reached like kind of the end of thinking it's going to fall over, so I'm just going to take a chance on this. So the setup of the Jenga blocks was there was one block that was kind of holding the top and the bottom half together, and then he decided to take a swipe at it, and then when he swiped it, the top part just fell down perfectly.
I think that shows standing. a healthy attitude towards risk, which is always good.
My favorite bit of that, but it's not on any video clips, is the other contestant's face. It was absolute shock. Like, it was so good. It's like, oh my God. But it was just brilliant.
Well, I've seen a slow motion video of it, and Runa is sat, one of the hosts of the bingo night, was sat on the sofa behind, And he's just looking really relaxed about it. And then, you know, the contestant takes his move and the crowd go crazy. But I don't think Runa's quite seen it at that point because he still looks really relaxed. And then when he realizes what's going on, his face is just amazing. Yeah. He's like, what?
Yeah, it reminded me of the other highlight. I think Nathan was...
Nathan's
commentary and you know, shorts.
Sure. So he was commentating on the track and field
on the Jenga.
With Dan Lister.
No, he commented on Jenga. The Jenga.
Oh, was it Jenga?
Yeah, he did Jenga, and it was really good. So I think, you know, we'll just campaign for him to do more of the event next year.
Yes. And those short shorts were fantastic.
Well, short shorts, yeah.
Yes, let's just say there's some blushing people on our table.
Yeah.
It's the thing an Australian can pull off with this, you know, all year round year sun, isn't it? And then you two disappeared. That's what happened next.
Us two.
Lee went missing from our table about 40 minutes, but probably round about then, and no one could see him. We didn't know where he'd gone.
Yeah.
And then they did the MVP table. There's Lee at the top of the table and Matt's down here, and he's never going to get an MVP ever again. They told you that when you joined, didn't they? No MVPs ever again. So you can never catch up to Lee. If I'm honest, I thought originally, oh, they're going to give Lee lifetime MVP now, because let's be honest, it's getting a bit silly. He just keeps winning. Need to give him lifetime. Maybe they'll do it at the end of the bingo. That'll be nice. Lee will get lifetime MVP. Then he can stop doing all this work stuff he has to do to win MVP
shut up.
Awards. Yeah. Yeah. Stop going on about it. We can forget him. He'll be lifetime, whatever. And then it came on. It was great. And that's the point at which I was right at the back and I went, oh, yes, I need to go take some photographs.
Yes.
So, well, it was a boxing match, wasn't it? For the MVP title.
Yeah.
And you were doing your sparring. So Lee told me afterwards, that's to be said, the main conversation I had with Lee afterwards was how hard the sparring was. Before the game of make the cardboard boxes, was you sparred for so long because the fake fight?
Yeah,
yeah. We weren't told very much about what was going to happen, so we were backstage, and then we started getting asked, "What's your strategy?" It's like, "What's going on? How's your trash talk?" I was like, I don't know anything." So we had to improvise very quickly.
Yeah, we weren't told what the actual thing was. We were told we wouldn't properly be boxing, but they wanted us to do the little bit of sparring at the beginning. We didn't actually think the sparring bit would go on that long either.
Were you waiting for someone to stop?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we were told get up, have a bit of a, you know, a tussle and we'll break you up very quickly. It's like, okay. And then that would be it. That would be the joke. And we're like, okay. Yeah. And then it wasn't. It was the main
event. We're getting to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm going to actually have to hit Lee.
Is that what you were thinking, Lee? I said, hit Matt.
Well, I thought if this is going to happen, I did say backstage, I was like, not the face. Okay.
But no, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So have you mastered the box technique? Have you done any additional practice since then of making boxes while wearing boxing gloves?
So if you didn't see the video, ultimately what it ended up being is we had to try and construct some cardboard boxes wearing boxing gloves. Yeah. So that was the actual boxing match. And my God, was that hard.
That was really, really hard. I thought, this would be okay.
Yeah.
It has to be said, I revealed loyalties I didn't realise I had during that. I might not tell you what they are.
Who were you cheering for?
Oh, I couldn't possibly say. There was a moment at the end, and this will give it away, where you obviously, Matt, you won.
Yes.
Top gif of you winning, by the way. But these boxes were a bit more higgledy-piggledy, much more. I felt much more in the community of open source. I very nearly thought I could run on stage and help Matt Lee with his boxes, because obviously it's all open source on Lee's side of the table. So we could all go and contribute to Lee's boxes, whereas your boxes much more felt like they were off the table to us, like we couldn't, you know, help.
just when we found out what was going on, I went over to Matt on stage and just said, we should collaborate. Because, you know, then that was, so I had this kind of, you know, later on, I think I had this idea of like, we should have done that. We shouldn't have, you know, tried to compete against each other. We should have collaborated together. Yeah. But would it have been funny? No.
You see, that's your open source brain kicking in. Whereas Matt was almost certainly going, I'm going to make as many boxes as I can.
That's the reason we didn't do it. I just wanted to win.
He wanted to win. Yes. But that's not how we do open source.
No.
Yeah, but it was good. It was good fun, but there was that. Yeah. Oh, we could have had a big strong message. The comedy value would have been diminished and would have ruined the evening. But yeah.
And I got to do my Rocky impression. So
you did. That was
a big win.
Class.
I didn't get that on video. I don't know if that's on video. I haven't seen that bit with you.
You didn't record my best bit.
I didn't record it, actually. I mean, as total nerdy, going back to nerdy, I took photographs.
Yeah.
But then modern phones don't take photographs. They take 5-second videos and then let you pick the video. Yeah. Well, let's be perfectly honest. The sparring wasn't of a professional standard.
What?
It was mainly two middle-aged men shuffling around in dressing gowns. Not that I'd be any better, but you know.
Wow.
But both, I have to say, you both seemed pretty, you know, it was a strenuous effort from both of you. Afterwards, both go, oh, it was really hard.
Yeah. Honestly, my shoulder and back were killing for days.
Oh.
That shows how unfit I was.
But that's the cost of victory.
Yes. It was worth it for the belt.
Yeah. Have you got the belt, or was it a prop, or have you got it?
I put it in memory lane, so it's there for every there for everybody to appreciate, not just me. Yeah. The day I won,
with a photograph of you holding it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, nice. I think that's a good episode. Program. Yeah, a good roundup.
Mm.
And I think it was another good year. I actually really enjoyed it, even though I was technically working. I managed to enjoy some good sessions. Good chats and thoroughly entertained, which is, I think, all you want to get out of CodeCon.
It is.
Yeah.
Next up is Code Cabin for me.
All about the events.
Oh, and Lee. Yeah. Code Cabin for me.
And me.
Yeah. You've never applied, Kev. What's going on? I know.
You keep bullying me. It's about timings and, you know, other things. I'm probably scared, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know, being in a room with all these, you know, amazing people.
Yeah,
it's intimidating.
So. But you'd be one of those amazing people, surely.
Well, I don't know. It might reveal the deep secrets.
Oh, is this the imposter syndrome where when you're actually with people, you fear, no matter the great products that everybody's using of yours, Usync and everything, Translation Manager, but if somebody actually sees behind the curtain, they'll realize you're just faking it.
Yeah, faking it until I make it.
So actually, now that I have mentioned Kirk, I mean, I should probably just say as well.
You should plug it. You should, otherwise Lucy will have words to do.
I know. Yeah. I will be in trouble. So the dates are Friday the 8th of September to Monday the 11th. But application deadline is Friday the 7th of July. So not long. Oh. So you need to get those applications in. Apply.
Mm. No.
Do it now. Do it. No. Do it now. Do it. Pause it. Go do
today.
It. Nice one.
Yeah.
So are we reusing you again, Kev? Or do you want to have another try?
Oh, I can't even remember what I said.
No. Can you not beat what you've already done?
I can't beat it. I think I've done as good as it'll get.
Right.
For now.
Let's do it again then. Hit it, Kev.
That's all we've got time for this week. Why don't you smash like, subscribe, and whatever the other buttons are, and listen to us on your favourite podcast thing. And ta-ra-la.